Water is life. If you don't have running water and a way to cleanse the water afterwards and a way to manage stormwater, no city can survive. And I tell people, when they look at our urban areas and you think of all the businesses of the downtown and the businesses that bring in money into the city, I tell people that downtown businesses do not run on gasoline. They run on water.
Hello, and welcome to Dwayne Mars DEI 360 with Joe West. I'm Yamika Anderson Howard, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Manager at the firm. On today's episode, Joe will be having an interesting conversation with Philadelphia Water Department Commissioner and CEO, Randy Hayman, as he explains why water is life.
Hello, this is Joe West. I'm a partner and the Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer at Dwayne Morris. I am thrilled and honored to have joining me today, Mr. Randy Hayman. Randy is the CEO and Commissioner of the Philadelphia Water Department. Randy, welcome.
Thank you, Joe.
First of all, I want to let people know that I've known Randy for a long time. Over the course of my career, I did the reverse commute, going from in-house to a law firm. Randy's done the reverse commute. He's done an in-house role in law firm, and then now back to a leadership role Philadelphia Water is a kind of a quasi-governmental entity. Is that fair to say?
Well, it's part of the government. We're a department of the government, but another major utility in the 10th largest city of the United States.
Well, before we delve into that, because listen, one of the things that we all know is how important infrastructure is, particularly something as essential as water and water-related services. But give us a brief tour through your illustrious career, please.
Okay. Well, basically, I attended University of Michigan and in Georgetown Law, but I'll go back a little bit further. When I was a kid, unfortunately, my mother passed when I was a little boy, about 9 years old. My father was a school principal for 49 years and very much dedicated and focused on education. And so my sister and I at the time went to his school. Then an opportunity came where we could go to a private school called John Burroughs, which is I humbly say is one of the top private high schools in the country. So we went there, went on to University of Michigan, went on to Georgetown Law. I got a job on K Street with the firm doing real estate law. I wanted more litigation experience. That was real big to me to get litigation experience. And so I went over to the NAACP and worked as a staff attorney on a project for a year. And then opportunity came to go to Missouri and be an assistant attorney general for the state of Missouri. And so I served in the state of Missouri and then was picked up by a major firm in the Midwest and did that for a couple of years in Kansas City. Opportunity came to move into their offices in St. Louis, which I did, which is my home where I grew up. And then out of the blue, an opportunity came to move to Metropolitan St. Louis Sewer District. And that's where I started my career in water. I had 10 years as a general counsel for the Metropolitan St. Louis Sewer District. 5 years, I went on to become general counsel for DC Water. And then I was a partner at Beveridge and Diamond, environmental law firm. And then unexpectedly, an opportunity came to become commissioner and CEO of Philadelphia Water, which I thought was excellent looking at all the other years I had in the industry. And so I very much have enjoyed it.
Well, let's get into that, Randy. I think there are two things that probably will jump out to people when you talk about this issue. One is sort of like the infrastructure discussions that took place around the infrastructure bill law that the president recently signed. And even before that, the Flint water crisis. If people did not understand and appreciate how important water was in their lives, those things probably should have made it front and center for them. Help people understand, A, the scope of the operations of a major water utility in a city like Philadelphia, and then generally how important that issue is, and, you know, what the future of that essential infrastructure looks like for major metropolitan areas.
Well, glad to do so, Joe. Water is life. If you don't have running water and a way to cleanse the water afterwards and a way to manage stormwater, especially now with climate change, no city can survive. And I tell people when they look at our urban areas and you think of all the businesses that are downtown and the businesses that bring in money into the city, I tell people that downtown businesses do not run on gasoline. They run on water. And so if you don't have a good infrastructure, you're not going to have a strong economic base. Now, the issue we're facing now and the reason we're having all the federal money being released is because for a number of years, for a number of decades across the United States, we have not invested in our water utilities, the infrastructure, what's out in the street. And most people don't understand how large the infrastructure is. Most of us, it's out of sight, it's out of mind. But the reality is in Philadelphia, we operate three massive water treatment plants, three wastewater treatment plants. We have over 3,000 miles of pipe for water and the same amount, 3,400 of pipes for wastewater under the ground. And then when you look at what has to be done, we have to go through and periodically repair the pipes. You know, we have pipes and infrastructure that's what we call at the end of life. That's similar to what you're seeing across the country. And as a result, now is the time that we have to be in a position where we're funding these utilities so they can make the repairs. Right now, we are repairing and replacing about 40 miles of water pipe per year. That's roughly about $5 million a mile, give or take. And then it's the same on the wastewater side. And I believe it's more of a $2 million per mile. So it's very significant. And if we look at one of our major projects, I talked about replacing pipes in the street, but a big issue we have is the plants themselves. And so we have a 25-year, $2.5 billion water revitalization plan where we're going in behind the fences, the part the public never sees. We have one plant, we're going to have to tear it down and rebuild. Others, we're making corrections and modifications to them. But it's $2.5 billion over 25 years. That is a massive investment, and all of it is necessary.
Well, I'm listening to these numbers, $2.5 billion over 25 years, $5 million per mile for replacing pipe. You're talking about significant resources, but if there are cities, municipalities, even states that are cash strapped, do you think that the decision makers, whether it's at the local level, state level, federal level, have the requisite amount of appreciation for the how vital these services are, number one, and number two, the wherewithal to appropriately, devote the resources necessary to maintain these vital services?
Well, I think they're all learning very quickly. I think we all had to jump on a fast learning curve, those who were behind. None of this is new. But what one of the good things I can say is the water community. When you look at the water community, be it through a different organization, National Association of Clean Water Agencies, Association of Metropolitan Water Associations, all of these major groups, they find ways to help out other utilities when there's an issue. So if there's something happening in Flint, they'll send people out to try to help. Or there's a need to share information, they'll try to share the information that they have. But I'll share with you this. Across the country, we're running into an issue of in the next 5 years, we're going to lose 50% of the individuals who work in water utilities. That's across the country. And so what we have to do is bring people into the water utility world. We do that by one, I tell people we have to fish in a different pond. We can't keep going to the same schools to bring in our apprentices and our interns and our new hires. And so we're very aggressively going to the HBCUs. I go down to Howard. We're bringing them in. we had to adjust our ability to hire people because in the private sector, you go through an internship, they hire you the next week. Well, in government, you have to go through your civil service process, and that took time. So we found a way to truncate that and therefore be able to give an offer quicker and get people while they're excited right after they have their internship with us. But these are things we have to do. We have to look at ways to make it attractive to the community so people want to become apprentice. We have to open the door so we're able to bring people in. And then we have to find a way to hire them quickly while they're interested.
So I rarely get the chance to interview a chief executive who is saying, hey, we're hiring and we want you to join this, if not this organization, certainly this profession. What's the pitch? What is the elevator pitch you would give to someone who's listening who might be a viable candidate or might know someone who's a viable candidate for this industry?
Well, I'll tell you this. We invest in our employees. We're on the cutting edge of engineering, of climate change, and we provide them the tools they need, the laptops, the computers, the equipment they need that rivals anything in the private sector. And so if they come to us and they want to work in water, well, they can go someplace else, but they'll get just a scintilla of an opportunity and exposure. Whereas if you come to Philadelphia Water, we're going to pull you in. You're going to be working on a $2.5 billion project over 25 years, and you're going to have a seat at the table and have a chance to really roll up your sleeves and work hand in hand with some senior engineers who have your best interests at heart. So it sells itself. It's a great opportunity to learn. And I'll tell you something else. We have a program where we, with our green infrastructure, where we allow individuals who have had run-in with the law to become part of PowerCore, and then they work for us and learn how to clean the rain gardens and the different things we do for climate change and green infrastructure. One gentleman was in my office the other day, young guy, and we were talking. He said, Randy, working for Philadelphia Water gave me a second chance. It allowed me to go to school, buy a house, buy a car, and take care of my family. He was almost in tears. And so was I listening to him. And so it's imperative that we use this utility to help people in the community. We're part of the community. And it's imperative that they understand, that people understand this is a great place to work and you're going to get a lot of opportunities, a lot of experience, and a lot of exposure.
Well, listen, you've said a lot about the organization you represent. I'm going to say a couple things about you. I had the privilege of meeting you, Randy, I think through our mutual friend, Ben Wilson.
Yes.
And I had an even better opportunity to get to know you through your involvement with the ABA and some of the diversity work you were doing with that entity. And I've always been impressed not only with what an extraordinarily talented and gifted leader and lawyer you are, but your deep concern for and active engagement around issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion. So talk a little bit about how important that is, why it's something that you focused on over the course of your career, and why it should matter to people who happen to be listening.
Well, it matters because I have a deep sense and respect for history. You know, I told you a little bit about my father, who was a school principal for 40 years. Well, I'll hold up, for those who are able to see the recording, I have a photograph of four or three grown men, African-American men, and a little boy with a suit and short pants. Picture was taken around, 1940-ish. And in the picture, believe it or not, is my older brother, who would be 86 now, he passed away. My father, Robert Burns Edgar Hayman, my grandfather, Robert Burns Edgar Hayman, and my great-grandfather, Philip Hayman. Now, and the little boy was named Robert Burns Edgar Hayman too. Now, why am I holding up the picture? Well, my grandfather graduated from Philander Smith College, Little Rock, Arkansas, 1908. My father graduated from University of Kansas with a bachelor's and master's in psychology, 1930. The little boy with the short pants who's real short grew up to be 6'5" and received a degree from a University of Berkeley, California, Berkeley, biochemist, wrote a paper on cholesterol and its effect on the brain in like 1956. I say all that to say is that we have greatness in us. It's in our DNA. And when we have an opportunity to step up and lead, we're able to do it. And so here at Philadelphia Water, I'm the first African-American to serve as a commissioner. And the amount of pride I feel, and also too, the amount of pride people even on the street feel. I one time went to a Verizon store, told the gentleman I was his new commissioner. He jumped up and said, "We've been waiting on you," and asked if he could take a selfie with me and gave me a big bear hug. And if that's happened once, it's happened at least four times to me. I want people to feel that Philadelphia Water is their utility, that we serve the community. We also offer jobs to the community. And it doesn't matter who you are or what you are or where you come from, did you have an opportunity to stand up and lead and really move forward within the organization? We're going to give you the tools and the training to do that. So we're at this point, you know, we're looking at our numbers. We're going out of our way to make sure we're fishing in different pools, as I mentioned before, different ponds, that we're going to the HBCUs, that we're trying to find ways to promote and attract people of diversity and color to our organization. It's hard. There's a lot to do to pull people in. But I think once they see what we're doing and the opportunities they have and the attitude that we have at leadership, I think it sells itself.
Randy, I think anyone listening to this conversation would realize why I have so much respect and admiration for you. Thank you for spending time with us. Thank you for your leadership. And thank you for all the great things that you're doing.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you for the opportunity.